session number 9428, reel 5.
Mr. Keel, reel 5. You were on the previous reel, you were describing a burial party you were on at the Hohenzollern Redoubt.
Yes.
Could you continue your story,
please? Yes, I could. Well, as I've explained some long time ago, the trenches all facing the Germany facing Germans, but to connect up with the support lines and reserve lines, there are communication trenches which run from the front line zigzagging all the way back until you come to the next line, support line, and then from there, zigzagging more trenches going back to support lines. So we had an order that there was a big mound of earth which was causing a lot of disruption because it was such a tall thing. A shell had evidently hit it and done some lot of damage. The one party of six men to go with tools and clear up this big mound of earth, which we did. I was one of them. Digging down just under the surface, we came across two bodies. And they were bodies we could sort of recognize. I don't know whether badges or whatever it was. We recognized them as two of our boys who had been missing for several days. Oh, it's old so-and-so. One we could recognise. He was terribly battered. The shell must have hit him, and he was all loose. His arms and legs were all loose. If you pick it, would shake about. But the other body had no head, arms, or legs. It was just a trunk, and even his clothes had been blown off. All he was got on was a sort of undervest, so we couldn't describe who he was. And so, anyway, the one with the wobbly arms and legs, the form of burial was to get your waterproof sheet, or a waterproof sheet, and a shovel, and ease the body over onto the waterproof sheet. Four of you lift it up to the height of your trench, where the other two or three would take the end of the thing and pull the thing over to that side of the trench and then dig a hole and then bury it there. That was a form of burial. Well, the first one, we got him over all right. But the second one, as I say, with no arms, legs or anything and no clothes except the vest, that was a difficult one. And we tried to push him on with a shovel every time it rolled off again. And we were getting frustrated. And we had in my section an Irish boy, a big boy, made two of me, but it was all, he couldn't stand anymore. He suddenly burst into tears and shrieks, I can't do it. He was absolutely hysterical. He was worrying us. So I said, bugger off, get out of here, go back the front line and leave us, don't go away. And so we were one less. And so as we couldn't shovel this poor bit of body onto the waterproof sheet, and I couldn't waste any more time, I got hold of a handful of the vest and pulled it onto the sheet, and the vest broke. Out fell this poor bloke's insides and heart and lungs, all his inside body all fell out of his trunk onto this waterproof sheet, and leaving a most ghastly sight. Well, we got him over anyway, we buried him, and we went back. But the smell of these two corpses had got on our bodies, not on our bodies, on our clothes and on our hands. And there was no need, no thing like going to a tap and washing your hands. There was no tap, there's no water to go to and wash yourself. But the smell was on it. When I got back, I was bloody hungry and I was thirsty. And I tried to drink and I tried to eat. But as soon as my hand went up to my mouth, I got the smell of this dead body. And it was about quite a couple of days before I could eat anything. I could not get rid of the smell of this death body. You've never smelled death, I don't suppose, like it. But it's the most ghastly, a most offensive smell, a dead body of standing. Mm. Then, from that again, we're talking about bits of men. I think I've... it comes into another story about... another story. No, I forget that.
Well, may I ask you...
Yes.
..about your reaction to death at that time?
Well, at that time, death is not like death would be today. There are deaths in my family and friends that I had never really got over. But deaths at the front were incidents. They were... that was it. That was war. It was incidents. That tomorrow, I practically forgot about it until it came up in conversation. You remember old Smithy? He was killed a couple of weeks ago. Oh, yeah, of course he was. Yes. That, see, it was finished. Nothing you could say about it. Death was that. I felt very awful in those days. I don't know. Lots of little things will come up later about my mother's presence around me. What was it? That I had some notion that so many of my pals had gone, and I seemed to notice that every time I spoke to one of my pals, in a couple of days' time, he was dead. And I had began to think I'm a sort of voodoo. I am wishing death on my pals, because so many have died, and I said, oh, you'll be the next one. And they were. And I began to hate myself. It couldn't have been anything in it, but there it is. That happened to me, that I was wishing death on somebody else. Of course, it's impossible. But that's what...
How long did you believe that for?
I don't know. It lasted quite a long time, I think. In fact, even today, I sometimes think, I mustn't think these things, thinking, I wonder if I shall ever see old so-and-so again. I try not to think about that, thinking that, well, there was a fantasy in those days of stress and war. It couldn't have been.
Did the sight of your friends being killed make you fear for your own life?
Never, never, never. I never felt... I never had the wind up. It was only twice that I said that I really had the wind up. When this thing when I said about these trees looked like funny gowls coming at me with crooked fingers and arms and legs.
That was when you were on sentry duty.
On sentry duty, yeah. That frightened me. And one other time, as I say, when I was corporal in charge of issuing blankets... greatcoats to troops away out. I was in the middle of a little forest, and we had dumps of overcoats. Troops had been without overcoats. Must have been getting autumn. And anyway, the dumps of overcoat were dumped in the woods, and an NCO had to be in charge of them, and I was the NCO in charge. And a truck would come down. We want 200 overcoats there, and here's the authorization. So I'd give them the 200 coats, and away they'd go. But I was up there two or three days, and I built myself a little shack. And at the side of it was a little slit trench. And the first night there, I went into my little shack and got a couple of overcoats of somebody else's. And I made myself a nice bed, and I was very comfortable. But in the middle of the night, zzz, bang, bloody shells falling all over. I had terrible wind up, and I rushed out from there down into my little slit trench and spent the rest of the night in my slit trench, shivering with fear that another one's going to drop on me. Next morning, when the troops started coming for their overcoats, I said, gosh, that was a terrible night last night. I said, what was wrong with it? It was all right, nice weather, and it wasn't wet. No, I said, but there are bloody shells coming over. Where did they drop? What shells? I said, the shells were coming over all night. They said the nearest shells were here were about 10 or 20 miles away. It was the sound of this little forest which amplified the sounds from a long way ago. No other sounds except that, but they were so far away, but it was amplified, and there was nothing like a shell anywhere near. That's the only second time that I really feared for my life.
Okay, thank you. Could we stay with your duties in the trenches? You described a couple of working parties you were on. Can you think of any other duties you had to do, like, for example, going to collect the rations or anything like that?
Yes. There's only one thing, but yes, I can tell it. Because where I turned thief. I think it was Hohenzollern again. I think it was there, because there was a nasty war there. Right?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, I don't know whether you've got a... yes, the... what was it? I was detailed, again, water. I've told you two or three times how difficult water was to get. Well, somebody had to go down, a little party of, say, six, and get water. Now, I had got a nasty dose on 1 foot of trench foot. I still got it to this day. In fact, after this session, I can show you to the red foot. Before going into that trench, when we took that trench over from some other regiment, as we marched in to relieve the others, as we marched in the trench, see, the other troops moved out the other side. But as I passed the officer's dugout, I saw perched on top of the officer's dugout on the little low roof, I saw a nice pair of Wellington boots. Well, all the officers, I thought, well, they've all gone now. Gee, I love those boots. And so as I came to them with my rifle, I just poked them the other side of the trench, and of course they fell down the other side of the trench, out of sight, out of mind, except for me. So when we had taken over, and I'm going to get my boots if they're still there. So I went there, my boots were still there, and all the time in the trench, I wore these, about size 12 rubber boots, but they saved me from further trench feet, and then I lost my own leather boots. I don't know how I lost them anyway. So I was detailed for this water thing. I thought, I can't go miles through communication trenches and carry back two petrol cans full of... so I said, is it all right if I find somebody who'll take my place? Yeah, it doesn't matter, as long as it's another man. So would you go down for it, and I'll do a little job that you've got to do here. He says, yes, you do my job, I'll do your job. Well, it was those boots that stopped me from marching all that way, so I did his little job, and his little job is what I mentioned about 5 minutes ago, was my burial job with my body all falling to pieces, and the two burials, that was the little job, and I only did that little job merely because I'd pinched those rubber boots and I couldn't march down and fetch water. That's got it.
Can you tell me any other general duties that you had in the trench?
General duties?
Or activities that you
No, it was all ordinary routine. We knew that we had got to look over the German side, see that they weren't coming over this side. That was one of the jobs. So you would be looking over there perhaps for an hour or 2 hours. Then you come down from there, then you'd have perhaps an hour's rest yourself. Perhaps you might be able to write a letter home, or start cleaning yourself up, or taking your shirt off and killing the bloody chats, as we called them. They were the lice. We'd have that, and then you'd be back again on duty, looking over the top. And so on. That was the sort of day. I was... That time, apart from all the other duties, I didn't get anything time off because of it. I was my colonel's, my second-in-command's, batman. He was a nice bloke, Colonel Samuels. I remember one day he said, Keel, do you think you could get me some water to have a shave? I said, you'd be lucky if you get water to have some tea, sir. He said, can't you get any water? I said, not spare like that. I said, then whatever water we can get, it will be for drinking purposes. So he said, well, I must have a shave. What can I do? I said, well, you don't always drink all your tea, do you? He said, well, no, they're always... I said, so save your little drops of tea, and I'll save my little drops of tea, until it gets about half a cup. I said, and then it's liquid. You've got your brush, you've got your soap, you've got your razor. Use the cold tea as the water and use that to make up your lather, which he did, and he said, I had a bloody good shave. And that was made of the dregs of teacups. So the little things like that that happened in the trenches, nothing outstanding, they're just normal things.
You say they're normal things, though, but it wasn't
well,
a normal sort of life.
Well, to me they seem normal. What else can you talk about? That was our life, looking over the top.
How could you keep yourself clean in the trenches?
You couldn't.
Perhaps we can pursue that then and look at the...
Well, it couldn't. It was only the lice was cleaning up your clothes and...
Could you describe how you cleaned the lice up?
Yes.
Now? Yes.
Right, well, it's... I say keeping ourselves clean. There was no such thing as washing ourselves. The only way you could do it, that you had got a spare shirt if you'd still got your equipment, but then what was the good of putting on a clean shirt when your body was lousy? So a lot of our spare time, we'll say in the evening or off-duty time, we'd call it off-duty time, was de-lousing. And that was done with your shirt off and your trousers off, or coat and jacket, anything, that had got seams. And you'd go up and down the seams of your garments looking for lice. And if you could only see nits, you know, like little tiny eggs, if you could only get those, but you can't pick those off. So we used to get our candle. We used to get candle issues, as a matter of fact, with our candle, and you'd run the candle flame up and down the seams of your shirt or whatever your thing. And that was in. And it was funny. You see these fellas all sitting in a row with a candle and a shirt and going up and down, and you could hear a little pop, 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 because even a little knit will go pop. But if it's a full-time louse, it'll go louder pop. That was part of the routine of trench warfare. Mm.
What were the sanitary arrangements in the trenches that you lived in?
Sanitary? Oh, haven't we done that before?
Trees? No, no.
Well, there's nothing. I can't see them, as a matter of fact. As far as I can remember, it was a little place, a little corner somewhere where would be a hole dug and perhaps a little sort of bar put across it. And that's where you'd partly sit or rest and do your business, then kick a handful of earth over it. And that's as far as I can see. But as far as making water goes, I can't remember where. At 10 to 1, we made water where we stood. I mean, you're not going to walk the other end of the trench to do a middle. No, I should imagine we did it where we stood. I can't remember doing it, mind you. I'm not going to say I was unsanitary enough to do it, but could be. Talk about the little bar things or doing a little whittle in a corner somewhere where no one was looking. But I can remember, I think it was, well, wherever it was, I was dying for a proper toilet, if you understand. But it wasn't to be, except that one very foggy day where I couldn't see the German lines couldn't see us, and over the back of the parapet, or the parados, that's the back part of it, were three little trees growing, only very flimsy little trees. But in my funny way, I thought, well, no, if I broke off one and laid that one over that one there, it'd make a nice little seat, and I could have a nice private tomtit on my own with nobody there. Nobody can see me, nobody's there. So, okay, I got out over the top, pulled the tree up, made the little barge, and I sat or balanced on the end of this thing, so comfortably, doing what I wanted to do. But you've never heard a bullet as it goes over your head. You don't hear the bullet that hits you, but you only hear it as it's gone past you. And anyway, I was sitting nice and comfortable, and just over my head went a stray bullet, like that. And of course you duck. Well, the ducking part of it put a lot of weight on my tree branch, which promptly collapsed. Down I went, and I sat in all the bloody muck that I had just done. And that was the end of my nice, cosy toilet. That's all I can tell you about lavatories.
Apart from, you mentioned lice as being a problem on streets. Were rats a problem?
Rats. They weren't so much a problem as something nasty. I got caught up with rats many times. I'd done some shopping for some officers one time, and I had got out of the trench, and there was a little tumble-down cottage, and I thought that was halfway from there to the regiment. So at night, I would go and sleep in this place with some old sacks and things, and anything I got left over, I used to put under my head with my overcoat on the top and a blanket over me, and have a nice little sleep there. But under my head would go any things. In this particular time, was I found some new carrots, and I thought the officers will love those, and so I'll take them to them tomorrow. So under my head went all these carrots with my overcoat on the top over them, and I thought, what the bloody hell's this crawling over my feet? And I kicked my feet up in the air. It was a rat that had got onto my foot, and I kicked it up. In the dusk, I'd see this rat going up in the air, hit the ceiling, down, and scampering away. That was all right, but the following morning, I looked at the stuff under my head, all the nice green part of the carrots and little holes in the carrots. These flaming rats had been eating all this food stuff under my head, and I didn't know it. I was fast asleep. That was rats there. Next lot of rats was a place called Givenchy. I got a feeling it was called. I'll think of it in a moment. But that was where it had been. Luckily, it wasn't at my time. It had been a very, very nasty bit of war, almost hand-to-hand fighting, and casualties were very heavy. And there was no such thing as nice burials at the end of those who got killed. They would just scrape the earth and chuck them in, or scrape the earth over them. And they'd been buried like that for some time. And boy, oh boy, did it stink with these dead bodies. But the sad thing was the rats there, and practically every grave had got holes going down to the bodies. The rats were having a real red letter day, just eating our boys' dead bodies. But the stink of the bodies and the rat holes by them was nasty. That is why I never liked rats, because I got my own back on them at later on at Lewes, for somehow I inherited an officer's riding whip. I must have pinched it, I'm certain. But it was a nice short, about 2 foot long, with a little leather one end and a sort of knobbly bit of lead the other end. Well, I liked it. I liked it. And so I used to wander about with this thing, and especially going up the communication trenches, where there was always lots of rats. And I don't know how I got it, but I also got a torch. Most unusual thing to have a torch. But I used to love to walk up and down this trench with my flashlight. You'd see a movement. It's flash a torch on, which would get the rat, all, what's this? And of course, I could look it up, thump, with my riding whip with the with a lead top. I don't know how many rats I killed like that with my riding whip. I hated them.
Did you take any precautions
at that same place where I used to parade up and down with my riding whip, there was a bulge in the wall of this communication trench. If you understand, imagine a passage, but a bulge in it that way. And eventually the earth started slipping away from it. No, but it was a very fat German's arse. He must have been killed and buried shallowly, but where they dug the trench through, they didn't see him. And as he's behind was sticking out. And do you know, underneath where his behind was, the trench was getting greasier and greasier. There was a, we would say it should have been a yellow. Well, it was getting a dark yellow. It was the fat out of this Jerry's body which was seeping away down the thing. And I can remember my rats and the German's arse and that. That's another thing of rats, of course.
Was it a long time before his body was removed?
Do you know, I can't remember when it was removed or if it was removed. All I knew was for the several days that I had to go past, he seemed to be getting thinner each day, and the wall of the trench seemed to be getting more and more oily. That's all I can say about him. But what happened to him, I really couldn't tell you. If he was eventually dug up and put somewhere else, I don't know. I didn't see it.
Was there any distinction made between the British dead and the German dead in terms of burying them, do you think?
Well, we wouldn't worry too much about the Jerrys. We would see that none of our boys were suffered and laid out in muck for... No, we would get decent burial, as we could, as decent as you could, to any of our own. And as I say, all that must have been done by fatigue parties, detailed to go to do burials.
Would you say that these insanitary conditions had any effect upon you personally?
Let's see now. I can't say that they did. I must have been a healthy little bloke. No, I can't say that all those stinks and eating with fingers that have touched death. I can't think of any bodily ailments. No, I can't think that anything like that happened that upset my tummy or any part of my body. I didn't pick up anything from all this death and germs and things. I didn't pick it up.
Seems to remember you mentioning trench foot earlier on. You got that.
Yes.
Could you say what that was exactly?
Well, it's trench foot is where the foot gets so cold, they're constantly wet, never dry, and the cold, it's like,
like frostbite.
Yes, that's it. Well, I think that would trench foot, or trench feet, I think was the forerunner of the word, what we said just
frostbite?
Now. Frostbite. I think it was the wartime name for frostbite was trench foot.
Can you remember what treatment were you given for it?
None, to my knowledge. I can't remember any. It'll get better, it'll get better. That's better.
Was it common?
I was there. I was never had any treatment for mine.
Mm-hmm. Was it common in the trench that you were in?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, lots of people, old soldiers, still suffer from trench foot.
What precautions could you do to try and avoid it?
Well, what precautions could you take? You couldn't say, I must have dry weather before I go back there. No, if the weather was wet, it was wet. If your boots let water, they let water. There's nothing you could do about it. It just came, and you put up with it.
Did these conditions have any sort of dispiriting effect on the troops, would you say?